My paper's actually, can you hear, is this all right? My paper's actually, well, it's actually called Works and Manuscripts of Wittgenstein. That's the main thing. I think the thing about biography does come in here because I find that the study of the works, that sort of study of the works, and particularly the study through the access to the manuscripts that we've got with the Bergen edition, depends also on access to a lot of facts about his life and his correspondence. That's to say, we don't, well, that is sort of the general message I'm making, is that we need to know the text, certainly we need to have them, the condition of the text. We also need to know the history of these texts, how they were produced, in what circumstances, at what point in his life, and what he was trying to do at that time. So that's the main sort of biographical element that comes in. So then my text goes, well, I'm going to say, it goes like this then. I was thinking of A. Hausmann's edition of Juvenal, which is now, I think, mostly read for its preface, which was written in what a contemporary called that slashing style which all know but few admire. But the edition had a serious purpose, and a higher order one. It was an edition produced editorum illum, that's to say, for the use of other editors. And it's in some such sense, I think, that we can regard the Bergen Nachlass, the Bergen, Oxford Bergen edition, as an edition. It makes possible, in many cases for the first time, to produce rational editions, or to make rational use of the material as yet unpublished, and also to improve upon editions already published. One use to which it can be put is that of resurrecting, it's not the only way of doing so, but it's an easy way of doing so, versions of works, the versions that Wittgenstein abandoned, or in terms of works that Wittgenstein abandoned, or superseded, lost works, one might call them. And I'm convinced this is a fruitful way of exploring the mass of material which might otherwise seem largely repetitious. We can sometimes see in this way what Wittgenstein for a while thought was a sufficient statement in his views. Later additions or cancellations, which are not necessarily improvements, represent what he thought at another time. I've often had occasion, perhaps too often, to quote Weismann's remark to Schlick that Wittgenstein had the wonderful gift, don fatale we might call it, the wonderful gift of being capable of seeing everything as if for the first time and for tearing down what he had just constructed. Well, improvements or not, the additional remarks cannot be what led him historically to hold the views expressed in an earlier version. While those dropped may linger on, things he drops from the earlier version, may linger on as ghosts and explain the terminology and even the argumentation of a later version. I speak of earlier and later versions, and it's important to regard these as neutral terms. We mustn't unthinkingly adopt what I've called the Aeneid view of Wittgenstein's progress. No goddess was leading Wittgenstein towards the philosophical investigations in the way that Aeneas was being led towards Italy. Certainly in that particular case, or in many cases, the version printed was the last in a certain series and no doubt was in some sense intended for publication, but we can't be quite sure that was in the form in which we now have it. We might even say that it became the last version by being selected by his heirs and published. There were earlier and later typescripts which might have been published in its stead, and which in some cases have subsequently been published as additions, editions. Well, now, I have a discussion here of a sort of early version of what I might call Philosophische Bemerkungen, 1938, an early version of the, when I say early version, in the sense in which I've used it before, what later became, if you like, Philosophical Investigations. And this has, very fortunately, been already printed in Joachim Schulte's and Joachim Schulte's edition of the Philosophical Investigations, which you'll find at the back of the hall. And I might leave my discussion of that, I think, leave that out and go to the, and not think about that for the moment, or perhaps return to it, and go to discuss the earlier work, the Tractatus, the Proto-Tractatus. That would be, I think, a better... the whole discussion takes place in terms of the idea of a work of Wittgenstein, something that might have been regarded as a provisional endpoint of a process of reflection and revision of his remarks. And there are wise remarks on this topic in Schulte's Wittgenstein, an introduction. In the introduction to his introduction. And it's in the case of works as they're defined that we can make particular application of the Bergen edition, the one that I have in mind. And so I wouldn't think of applying it to pocket notebooks with sketches of ideas dashed down perhaps as they first occurred to the author, not even to the larger Bender, the manuscript Bender, the volumes in which he recorded his ideas for later use and from which he made selections, usually by dictation, to a typist. The typescripts so produced were sometimes works in the sense I'm speaking of, but were often commissioned simply in order to facilitate overview, revision, and rearrangement of material. We find him avowing such a purpose in a letter to von Wright of 6th of November 1947. I'm dictating some of the stuff which I wrote during the last two or three years. It's mostly bad, but I've got to have it in a handy form, i.e. typewritten, because it may possibly give rise to better thoughts when I read it. I have some examples of such works. I think of the Extractor Manuscriptbücher, typescript 211, can be contrasted with the clean version of 213, the so-called big typescript, which was a projected work, whereas the Extractor Manuscriptbücher was a revisionary or working typescript. Other examples of revisionary typescripts may be the two sets of Bemerkungen, 1 and 2, 228 and 230, though Schulte thinks the latter is a Versuch or draft. On the other hand, 227, now part 1 of Philosophische Untersuchungen, was surely a projected work, though it lacks the discussion of foundations of mathematics, which was probably originally intended to publish with it, if we're to judge by Wittgenstein's draft prefaces. One might even say that the early Notes on Logic was a working document, whereas its rearrangement by Russell, or by Costello, on Russell's behalf, was a projected work. That's to say, a formal publication was envisaged. In fact, it was, I think, only distributed to Russell's class at Harvard. Notes dictated to Moore was perhaps also a projected work, in that Wittgenstein may have hoped that, perhaps together with Notes on Logic, it would serve as his BA thesis. Your MA thesis, but it's, I think, a BA thesis, which could have the title Logik. Philosophische Bemerkungen, the book we now call that Philosophical Remarks, is a hybrid case put into very limited circulation. It was shown to Russell and Moore at Littlewood when he had to produce some evidence for a fellowship, but I'm not sure it could be thought as the final phase of anything. It even begins, as it well known, with a reference back to something that was earlier. It was earlier in the manuscript bunt from which it's taken, but which occurs later in this set of extracts. And here I think I disagree reluctantly with Dr. Schulte, who places it among the works. So much for the general context in which I speak. I leave discussion of the 1938 projected work, 1938 to 40 projected work, for possibly if anyone wants to talk about it. But, but I will just say one thing about it. If we do think of a projected work, it might be a good idea when we're doing this to think about the titles we use for these works. of works that comes or the published works of Wittgenstein. And perhaps a date should always be included. The one that Schulter calls, I think, the Bearbeitete Frühfassung. I don't remember quite whether that's the one or whether I've got the right one. I know I don't think that's right. I think he just calls it the Frühfassung. I would call it something like, as I say, Philosophische Bemerkung, and we know Wittgenstein wanted to call it that, 1939-40. He wanted to call it that when he presented it to the Cambridge University Press. And so perhaps we should speak about Philosophische Untersuchung in 1945 for what we know as part one of the published book, Philosophische Untersuchung. On the whole, I think that Bemerkung suggests a less finished work than Untersuchungen, but this is debatable. On the whole, Wittgenstein's titles are simply an indication, this is my work, this is philosophy, this is the produce of my philosophy at this time. Another question to be mentioned, since we're considering editorial matters, is the fundamental one of the cataloguing of Wittgenstein's papers. Von Wright's numbering has been extremely useful. But obviously, it's not a very systematically constructed catalogue. It's based sometimes on content, sometimes on chronology, and sometimes on the physical form. A calendar of actual documents should surely be made the basis, with allowance for multiple copies of typescripts, and indicating also different layers of corrections. This is as much a reproach to myself, perhaps some others could be laid under blame too, myself, that I worked with Von Wright on this catalogue. We had ample opportunity to do something about it. We were too anxious to get ahead, and also perhaps unaware how many further documents were to turn up. I don't know if I mentioned now that the, for example, a lot of typescripts that forms this Frühfassung of the, shorter called the Frühfassung of the Philosophie Untersuchungen, occurs in, it has the numbers 220 and 239. It is the same typescript. As a matter of fact, it's divided up even in such a way that the top 220 has half the top copies and 239 is half the other half of the top copies, and then the rest of each of them is the carbon copy. So it's sort of, in a way, identical typescript, but it has two different numbers and not even two adjacent numbers. A different problem is number 221, which occurs. Which is a different typescript, because in fact it was made in Cambridge. But that is paginated as a continuation of 220. So there are problems of that kind, which I think ought to be dealt with in the long term. The identification of these manuscripts and the finding out where they were typed and why they were typed, as I say, we need to know biographical facts for these. But already I want to stress the value of information on the history of manuscripts and typescripts. An adequate study of when they were produced is still lacking, so far as I know. It would require some study of typewriters and paper and a collection of all the casual allusions to dictation and the like that can be found. I'd really like to ask von Wright, if he were here, who was the, for example, Wittgenstein in when it is 1944, I think 1940, writes to and asks, says he writes to someone and asks whether they could find a typist for him. That happens more than once. Find a typist for him in Cambridge, because the lady he typed it to before, he'd forgotten her name, but she lived on Grange Road or something like that. The details are not to be depended on here, because I'm just talking from memory. Well, von Wright will know who the lady was in all probability. I think it was to von Wright he wrote talking about this. That's why I think von Wright would know. And you see, it's very likely we can work out that the typescript 221 was typed for the secretary, I think it was called the University Secretarial Agency, Miss Bate. Miss Bate, is that right, in Cambridge? Who, in fact, also the translation of the Tractatus was dictated by Ramsay. So these sort of things we ought to find out if we can. Well, I want to discuss now, more seriously, I think, which is the main part of what I want to say, what service to editors does the Bergen edition provide? The projected work in Schulte's edition is an example of how far one can get. I think it's fair to say Schulte would tell us practically without it. I mean, it might have been convenient to have it from the start. But you can see, in fact, from Schulte's edition, but not that the demands of providing the various versions for comparison, when it's preferable that each should be readable as a text and not merely virtually present in the form of footnoting of variants, makes considerable demands on a conventional book. And we're fortunate to have it done for us in the case of Schulte's edition. He and I made some attempt at this sort of thing in the critical edition of Tractatus some 12 years ago. I think there's a copy of that also at the back. But in general, and in particular precisely in the last case of Tractatus and previous versions of that, I think that the further work of this kind can best be conducted with the help of the Bergen edition, where the versions virtually present can be extracted experimentally by the individual scholar and even communicated to other scholars by electronic means, by internet, whatever, and taken as a basis for collaboration. Technical and legal aspects of this, I'm not competent to do more than indicate, but I'll attempt to illustrate the scholarly output that it might be hoped for. Well, I have in past times passed a preface, I think, to a second edition of the Proto-Tractatus, and a paper in one of Rudolf Harrer's collections. I have indicated that in the manuscript 104, there are several layers of text. It's a misleading to call the manuscript as a whole a Proto-Tractatus, because while there is in it an early, implicit in it, an early version, or as I think, two early versions of the projected Logische Philosophische Abhandlung, it also contains, on pages 103 to 118 in Wittgenstein's numbering, a series of corrections to a typescript very like our own typescript, the Engelmann Gmunden typescript, well, anyway, the typescripts that we have of the LPA, which was also upheld. So it leads us to suppose that there may have been a sort of penultimate typescript to which these additions are to be made. And it's not quite certain that it wasn't typescript, it was entirely typescript, this thing, to which they are to be added. They're called a correctur. Well, the manuscript, the 104, which we do have in the Bodley, and I could call it the Bodleianus because rather than call it Proto-Tractatus, contains what has been called Proto-Tractatus, but it's not identical with it. Moreover, the preface at the end of the book, pages 119 to 121, is not a preface of the Proto-Tractatus at all. It's a preface to the Tractatus itself, to the final version, in which the corrections on page 103 to 118 occur. As one of the editors of the volume, I must castigate myself on both counts. The layers I now have in mind of the Proto-Tractatus, the layers of previous versions, correspond to the typescript made in, well, first layer I want to consider, it corresponds to the typescript made in September 1916. A typescript made of work that Wittgenstein was putting together between June 1915 when entries in his notebook 102 ceased, and March 1916, when he went to the front, and entries in his notebook MS 103 began, though sluggishly. The existence of this typescript, now lost, we know from letters to his sister, and we infer that there was no notebook. It's possible to infer that there was no notebook between these two, because we have a list by him of his notebooks, and it doesn't seem to allow for anything, I suppose, in between these two notebooks. He was preparing the typescript with the help of the Proto-Tractatus was produced as part of that exercise, part of that reported to Russell in November 1915 that he was producing this work, the Abhandlung. And I have little doubt that it corresponds to the first 70 pages, in Wittgenstein's numbering, of this, of the aims of this manuscript. Well, let's take the manuscript. Let's imagine the existence of this typescript then. And he subsequently made additions to this typescript, perhaps by manuscript insertion of pages or in the margins, drawing on the third notebook, the one he began in March 1916, not previously represented in the work, as well as once more on the earlier notebooks that are represented in the work. So those will have consisted in the manuscripts 101 and 102, the wartime notebooks, as the first two wartime notebooks, together with a lost manuscript book, which he began in Norway before the war, and which he had designated to be sent to Pinsent in the case of his own Wittgenstein's death. Now, in event, as we know, it was Pinsent who died, and which is perhaps all the more reason to think that perhaps this manuscript was sent to Pinsent's mother and is hence now lost, unlike its congeners, honestly, the other three wartime notebooks. Now, these additions, or these additions from manuscript 103, the third wartime notebook, they were probably made before Wittgenstein returned to the front in January 1917, and any subsequent work at the front or elsewhere will have been on the corrected typescript. He only came back to the Bodleianus 104, Tractatus volume, in his protracted leave in the summer of 1918, when he prepared the final typescripts. Three copies of these remain, derived from two insignificantly different typings, but they were probably preceded, not quite certainly, however, by an intermediate version, Correctur, but I'm not sure about that. The Correctur may have been produced from 1916 manuscripts with typescript, 1916 typescript with may have been prepared from that with manuscript insertions on sheets. Well, I could go into the story of the manuscripts he read in 1918. But let's go back to the September 1916 typescript. This corresponds to the first 70 pages of the Bodleianus, with possibly three or four afterthoughts from page 71. Page 71, breaking points indicated quite frequently, not quite frequently, there are a number of them, I shall mention more in the manuscript. And there are certainly ones which I think are particularly significant on page 70 and 71 of the manuscript, where I think the trick occurs. There are two possibilities for that. I'm going to try and show you these pages. There's 71. You can see the line above the 6.01. And then on the, which I think is the end of, certainly A, Anno version, but to which he then immediately adds these ones here. It's in Gleichwerthy, and then there is also a hidden proposition at the top, which I'll tell you about, and then there comes that line. These are, by the way, the production of these I don't want to praise them particularly, but for the production of transparencies, it was necessary to use a some way of enhancing the photo. We used Adobe Photoshop and put various colors in and out of the thing to produce things which come up reasonably well on the screen. That, by the way, is just a technical point to pass. So those are some of the breaking points in which I want to come back. Here is the first page, just to give you something to look at. No, that's not the first page at all. Sorry. Well, actually, that page does better for what I want to do, but I'll come back to it later. And what I was going to say is that you'll find here the each proposition in the manuscript book, this section here, is ticked. You can see the little ticks where I hope you can see them fairly well. Presumably as an indication that it has been inserted into some stage or other of the production of the work in a consecutive form. And one or two propositions which do not appear, or not immediately, in later stages, are indicated instead by a cross. In the later part of the manuscript, after page 71, the cross has a different significance. Well, I say something in parenthesis. If we think that Wittgenstein used these propositions, ticked on them, and made ticks against them, and so on, when he put them into a typescript or in a manuscript of loose sheets, we know that he produced that at various stages in the production of work by what he says. And it may be asked, why does the manuscript book into which they're written exist, the loose leaf manuscript presumably made for it, and the typescript certainly made, do not? The answer lies in a habit of Wittgenstein's, that I can see already in the propositions that in the discussion in Schulter's, in the typescripts and so on, that Schulter has discussed. Wittgenstein favoured to the preservation of his thoughts as they were first written, when first written into the record, whereas he often discarded provisional rearrangements once those rearrangements were superseded, to avoid confusion. And you can see both in his dispositions in 1938 when he wrote to his sister, and again previously when he wrote to his sister in 1916, he says destroy this or that other thing. In this case, he says destroy a copy of the typescript in which he hadn't made certain corrections. Well, the inferred September 1916 typescript, there are good reasons for thinking that he did it in September 1916, simply by thinking of his war service and where he was. They can be reconstructed, and it's fairly easy with the facilities of the PC to reconstruct them. You can even experiment with various stages in the production of that typescript. The various stages seem to be indicated by lines in the text like those on page 70 and 71 already mentioned. And there are similar lines on pages 22, I'm not going to show you them all because they're not particularly interesting, but 22, 28, 52, and 64. And this yields a succession of Abhandlungen, which were formed by a process of accretion. That's to say, the numbering in each section always presupposes the numbering in the preceding sections. And in general, well, and not conversely, but I would say, it's not often that a later number occurs more than a page before an earlier number, so to speak. Always is subject to the occasional change of numbers occasioned by later insertion, which is usually visible in the manuscript, and is, of course, accessible in the Bergen edition. though sometimes it's better, as I suggested, to use Adobe Photoshop or a similar program where the images can be enhanced. There's no particular difficulty about doing this. And so, in the privacy of the study, a whole series of typescripts can be produced, and their successive slotting in to one another can be demonstrated. And these will correspond to the stages in which Wittgenstein composed the whole. Most probably he did this by writing remarks into a numbered framework in his loose-leaf version and also recording them in his manuscript book. It's relatively unimportant whether the remarks are written into the book first or into the supposititious loose-leaf copy first. But the irregular, though not chaotic, order of the numbered propositions in the book suggests that he wrote down there, in a rough order, the propositions he, at that particular time, wanted to insert somewhere or other and then inserted them. That way, assigning them was at that time. The propositions inserted are sometimes, but not always, drawn from the notebooks known to us. For the September 1916 version, the notebooks drawn on are manuscripts 101 and 102, together with the lost pre-war notebook. And some of the passages taken from the pre-war notebook we can recognize because we have translations, presumably taken from that notebook, in the notes on logic and notes dictated to Moore. Contributions from manuscript 103, the notebook that contains entries from 1916 and early 1917, occur only on or after page 71 in the Bodleianus and will not have occurred in the typescript we're reconstructing. Parallels between the final version of the LPA and all the notebooks and the notes on logic, etc., are indicated in the philological edition by Schulte and myself, and a reverse index of them can be found in the Blackwell edition of the notebooks. Let's say you can, if you go down there, not the index exactly, but you can see indicated in the Blackwell edition where there are things thought to be parallel in the Tractatus. Most of the parallels in Bodleianus can be calculated using the cross indexes in editions of the Proto-Tractatus. Alternatively, you can use, this is quite, I hope, interesting, the search or query features of the Bergen edition can be used, and these will find parallels fairly easily, if they exist, will find parallels to in the notebooks to those Proto-Tractatus propositions that are not found in the I'll exhibit some results of examples of the results of such investigations. Completeness is, of course, impossible to guarantee, and there are elements of arbitrariness in deciding where the limitations of quotation or parallelism are to be drawn. Incidentally, it's occasionally likely that the Proto-Tractatus remark in this volume, in this first typescript, is a correction of something in the notebooks with which it presents a contrast. There are some examples of that. I'll now show, I hope, an example of a page or two of a typescript such as you might make, showing the parallels, showing some parallels. Well, here's page one, show two of them. It's possible, you see, and this also is a thing that you can't do, I don't know how well you can see that. But as it happens, I've, in this case here, the red text represents what's on the first 22 pages of the manuscript, whereas the black text represents what's on the between pages 28 and 52, which is by far the biggest section of this part there, that's why I did it in black. And you can see that a certain number of parallels occur in all those cases, but not but not an overwhelming number. By no means all the propositions are drawn as we can be shown to be drawn, can be shown by me to be drawn from the you can see here that I put in later. Yeah, I think that rather faint one is pages 22 to 28, whereas the green one. It's pages. Anyway, it's a later section. I don't remember which one it is exactly. There's another one which is more interesting. Now that sort of thing you can produce, and as you can see, you can produce it in a way which illustrates visually where these layers come. You can also, of course, produce a section which only shows you the red section and shows you the first section or the first section with the second section. It's not like that. However, that's a thing you can, I don't say fairly easily, but you can do it with the use of the Bergen, making use of the Bergen edition. Well now, on the basis of that, we can have a rough account of the composition of the this early Abhandlung, starting with the, of course, the first page. Well, it's page 3, as he calls it here. Plan of the work is laid down. None of the propositions, I think that's fair to say, now, dear me. I'm not quite sure about this, but in my opinion, none of the propositions there has an exact parallel in earlier notebooks or in Notes on Logic or Notes Dictated to Moore. There is a parallel between proposition 3.2 and which occurs on here, Satsaifen, there is a parallel with that in notebooks 1816. In notebooks for 1915. I don't know if you can read it up there very well. But it's, in my case, of opinion, it's a specious parallel. The two don't say the same sort of thing at all. On the first page, he plans to work his way through from facts. Perhaps I should put that back up again there. From facts, to states of affairs, to pictures, to thoughts, to propositions, and so on. He can't assume here that a thought is a proposition. The correction, you see there's a correction there, Satz, where he crosses out Satz and puts Gedanke instead. That's a clear slip of the pen, since Gedanke is required by the proposition that follows. There's another obvious direction, of course, above, where he begins thinking of the slip of the mind, as it were, die Welt ist die Gesamtheit. Then he begins to say, der Dinge, but instead, no, he corrects that to der Tatsache, which, of course, is what he sure wanted to say. But in any case, pretty sure that the these propositions were written before 1916 or something. From propositions, he moves on to what they present, to truth possibilities of to truth functions, and he ends with the general form of a truth function. Note that there is no proposition 7, general form, i.e. what can be understood about logic, in the light of it, is the destination envisaged. The following 20 pages, which are 21 pages actually, the first tranche, so to speak, contain a number of passages drawn from manuscripts 101 and 102, one or two occasions when there seem to be parallels with material in the 1916 notebook, but not near enough to be thought as quotations from that. The pages give a skeleton of the argument, bringing us to the general form of propositions. Facts, Sachverhalte, pictures, thoughts, And then that station, the Logisfors Offshore, uphandled, rather misses out, to some extent misses out this phase, propositional signs, which become proposition sets when their mode of picturing is determined. It's arguable the context here supports the interpretation of Rees, speaking of course of 3.11 of it's 3.11 in the 3.11 in the final version of LPA, but not on there, it's a different thing. And that Rees thinks, probably right here, that it's important to say, I think at one point we translated it, the method of projecting a proposition was to think its sense, whereas Rees says quite rightly that applying the proposition and thinking its sense are identical, and this is what Finkenstein meant to say. And I think if we see this, if we see this, I'm afraid I'm running a bit short of time for this, if we see this in the context in just that context, without the later material, we can see that it's more obviously true. Comes out as not a transparency, but a real page. Oh well. I'll leave that for the time being. Well, I'm afraid I've really got quite a lot more to say. I'm awfully sorry about this. Tranche 1 continues with the main discussion of the propositions and what they can represent. And what they can only show. It shows, well, there are many things. Quantified propositions are dealt with very briefly by referring back to something, the possibility of formal generalization. This is done by applying the joint negation to a function. And Wittgenstein says that, remember, that Wittgenstein says that Russell, Frege too, but he overlooked this form of generalization. The important thing is to produce a variable expression that will represent the common element in a series of forms. Russell fails to do this, apparently, now you can tell me whether you think this is right, by indicating a series and saying and so on, whereas it is precisely what and so on means that needs to be indicated. The importance of this point is slightly obscure in Logisfors Offshore Abhandlung, where some of the relevant propositions are transferred to the discussion of formal concepts in 4.1273 following. You'll find there's something similar in the body, but in the body of the manuscript, the reference to the formal generalization and the overall by Russell occurs all in one context. Well, now I think probably I should just say this, that we can see that the following tranche, they introduce bit by bit the things we have in 4, and then they have the things that we have in 5, and they draw quite promiscuously, really, on the first 3 notebooks. On the first 3 notebooks, the lost one and the 2 first 4 remaining ones. They don't draw in the others. The final tranche, so to speak, before we reach the propositions that I showed you before on the board on page 71, the final tranche is entirely drawn from the, nearly entirely drawn, it's a cast around parallel, it's nearly entirely drawn from the notes dictated to Moore. And it looks to me as if the upshot of this really is that, I think this can be demonstrated, which is a bit boring to do it, that Wittgenstein set out in this work that he was writing in 1916, he set out to produce something which would be the, which would give us the formal, what he says there is the common element to a series of forms. And that would be the common element to all truth functions. And that is exactly what he was giving us at proposition 6, which occurs on the first page. He then, when he's got all the things that lead up to proposition 6, he then adds a whole section. It all occurs in the last tranche, which describes the nature of logic. And that is the early 6.1 of the Tractatus, more or less. And these are almost entirely drawn, as they are, from the notes dictated to Moore. You'll see in this way how things go there. At pages 64 to 70, you'll see references to MA quite a lot, whereas pages 52 to 64, there are mostly other things. You can see that they're nearly all 14, 15. But at pages 28 to 52, obviously the greatest number of parallels occur there, but because it's the largest section. But it's also, you can also see that the frequency of references, well, it doesn't matter too much, but the first two sections, although they cover nearly 30 pages, do not contain as much as this section here. Well, I'll just suggest something, I think, about, I can say something about Wittgenstein's method of composition there. So, if that was so, the proposition, when we arrive at page 70 and 71, Wittgenstein could have just stopped at the end of these propositions, 6.1, where it ends up by saying roughly that logic is transcendental, and the propositions of logic say nothing. And at that point, he could perhaps have stopped, and he would have done what I think his book sets out to do. Might even be said, you remember there's this story of the philosopher who tries to convince some tyrant that he is a philosopher. He, as a philosopher, can put up with anything, so the tyrant subjects him to considerable unpleasantness. And the man says, well, there you are, you see, I've resisted it. And the tyrant says, no, if you had kept silent, you would have been a philosopher. Si tacuisset, philosophus fuisset. And we might even say that to Wittgenstein. His first book was entirely, his first treatise was entirely, said nothing. He then, in a moment of weakness, he adds the propositions on page 71, which I showed you originally. The one that you can't read is the one, where there is one which you can only read with great difficulty. You can read it in the Bergen edition, and it was 6.2. See, I've said he got down to 6.134 or something like that, which is the logic can say nothing. And then he adds these three propositions. The 80 besteht nicht aus Sätzen. Just read that, 6.2. 6.3. Oh, by the way, the edition is the Bergen edition, I think, may transcribe it as 6.4, but it's actually 6.3, as you can see if you look closely. Another proposition of defect that there are no propositions of truth. And then you can add, what we cannot talk about, we must be silent about. Now, I can then reconstruct the further stages in it, but my main point was that this sort of study is made much easier by the Bergen edition.